This is called Mangal Geetam. Mangal means auspicious. Geetam means song. And it's composed by the famous Jayadev Goswami. I think everyone has heard of his name. He is one of the most famous Vaishnava poets. And in Jagannath Puri especially, his magnum opus, the Gita Govinda, is sung regularly for the pleasure of Lord Jagannath. Even till today, you will find ordinary people who come up to have darshan, just chanting the verses from this song. Much of the classical dance in India today, in all the different types of dances, whether it's Bharatanatyam or Kuchipudi, Kathakali, Kathak and so on, they are based on Jayadev Goswami's, many of them are based on Jayadev Goswami's Gita Govinda. The Gita Govinda is actually a very, very advanced text, and Srila Prabhupada asked us not to read it because it's so advanced. Nevertheless, there are some songs that we sing from that, like the Dashavatara Stotram, you know, the song of the 12 of the 10 incarnations of the Lord. That's from Gita Govinda. We sing that. And this is also from that. This Mangala Geetam is from that. Because this is relatively very simple and straightforward and sweet. It's not very esoteric as are some of the other songs in this compilation. So it's quite all right for us to chant this song. And Jayadev Goswami's songs are especially noteworthy, not only because they are so devotional, so perfect in their theological conclusions, but also for their meter, their lyrical quality, and the simplicity of the words he uses. Very simple, short, sweet words. And that's why these songs become very attractive. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Kurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathantitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padang Sahaganda Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Mitinamine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Vancha kalpataru bhyascha kripa sindhu bhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 I think most of you would have heard this song or sung this song before. How many of you haven't heard this song before or chanted it before? Please raise your hands. How many of you haven't heard this song? Okay. Shrita Kamala Kucha Mandala He Drita Kundala He Drita Kundala He Dhritakundala Kalita Lalita Vanamala Jay Jay Deva Hare Jay Jay Deva Hare Dinamani Mandala Mandana He Bhavakandana He Bhavakandana Muni jana manasa hansa Muni Jaya jaya deva hare Jaya jaya deva hare Kaliya Vishadhara Ganjana He Janaranjana He Janaranjana Yadukula nalina dinesha janaranjana Yadukula Jaya jaya deva hare Jaya jaya deva hare Madhumura Naraka Vinashana He Garudasana He Garudasana Surakula keli nidana Jaya jaya deva hare Jaya jaya deva hare Amala kamala dala lochana he Bhava mochana he Bhava mochana he భవమోచన త్రిభువన భువన నిధాన జయ జయ దేవ హరే జయ జయ దేవ జనక సుతా కృత భూషణ హే జిత దూషణ జిత దూషణ సమర శమిత దశ కంఠ జయ జయ దేవ హరే జయ జయ దేవ హరే అభినవ జలధర సుందర ధృత మందర ధృత మందర శ్రీముఖ చంద్ర చకోర జయ జయ దేవ హరే జయ జయ దేవ హరే తవ చరణం ప్రణత వయం హే ఇతి భావయ ఇతి భావయ కురు కుశలం ప్రణతేషు జయ జయ దేవ హరే జయ జయ దేవ హరే శ్రీ జయ దేవ కవేరిదం హే కురుతే ముదమే కురుతే ముదం మంగళమోజ్వల గీతం జయ జయ దేవ హరే జయ జయ దేవ హరే జయ జయ దేవ హరే జయ జయ దేవ హరే As I was mentioning earlier, Srila Jayadev Goswami's songs are exceptionally devotional, so much so that he was one of the favorite poets of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami mentions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that especially in the Anti Leela, but even before, Mahaprabhu used to relish the compositions of some very great Vaishnava poets like Vidyapati, Chandidas, Bilva Mangal Thakur, Jayadev Goswami, apart from the compositions of Ramananda Rai and also, of course, the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Jayadev Goswami has always been very intimately connected with Jagannath Puri. Ever since he composed it several centuries ago. And even some of the cloths that are offered to Lord Jagannath, especially at night, just before the Lord is put to rest, is woven with the whole Gita Govinda on it. The whole text of the Gita Govinda is actually woven onto it. It is said that when Jayadev Goswami actually composed this, as he spoke it, there were weavers who were weaving. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the way handloom works. You make cloth with a hand. This is handloom cloth. They only like to wear handloom. So it's very nice. It's cotton. It's good. And no polyester chemicals mixed in it. It's very simple. And that's how they did it in the old days. You have a lot of these handloom weavers around Mayapur, especially in Shantipur. It's very famous for a long time for handloom weaving. So these weavers would weave it like that. And in one case, Krishna personally intervened and completed a verse when Jayadev Goswami went into an ecstatic trance about something. And so with Jagannath, it's so important. Jagannath likes to hear it so much that he actually instituted a law. He said, no, I want to hear this. And before I get to the song, just a brief narration of that pastime. One time when the king came in the morning to have darshan of Lord Jagannath, he saw that Jagannath's body was full of dust and thorns and so on and so forth. And he was furious. So he called the pujaris and asked them, what's going on here? Just look at the Lord's form and just see how he's so dirty with dust and thorns and things like that. How is that possible? So even the pujaris were perplexed. They said, Your Highness, we have no clue what has happened. We put him to rest properly. There was nothing wrong there. So, of course, Jagannath is a very active Lord. So he does all kinds of pastimes. So then the king appeared to the Jagannath appeared to the king in a dream and said, no, actually I went out because there was this young lady who was reciting Gita Govinda, and I go out every night to listen to the way she sings Gita Govinda, I just can't avoid it. And she was in a vegetable garden and Jagannath was following from behind, the deity I mean. And every time she smelled the aroma of camphor mixed with musk and so on, and she felt a lurking sensation that someone's behind me. And every time she turned around, there was nobody. But there was just that lingering scent of the aroma of the musk and the camphor and so on. And she couldn't figure it out. But that was Jagannath, because she was singing Gita Govinda as she was doing her work in the garden. So Jagannath would come every day. So then the king realized that Jagannath likes this so much, so he instituted this as a regular daily practice. And that's how the Devadasi thing started. The girl would come and actually sing every day for Jagannath. And then the Devadasi thing started. Of course, then about 100 years ago, it was discontinued because of various reasons. We won't go into that. So Gita Govinda, therefore, is very famous, and this is one of the songs. Now, of course, with materialism taking over, you don't find so many devotees, local devotees like this, who will come here and sing spontaneously. But till a few decades ago, you could find people just reeling off verse after verse, just from memory, just standing there in front of Jagannath and reciting the verses. One time I remember when I went for darshan of Lord Jagannath, I was standing next to an ordinary man, and the security guards were pushing him and pushing me also, but pushing him. And when he started speaking, I was just struck with wonder. And I didn't move from there because I just wanted to keep on hearing him, the way he was chanting with so much devotion. And he was just going on verse after verse after verse. And I didn't realize what he was singing till one or two verses, then realize he's chanting Gita Govinda. You know, this is the devotional culture. It's so rich. So let's see it with this background, and we can get a glimpse of how great Jayadev Goswami was. So in this song, he begins by saying, Shrita Kamala Kucha Mandala He. He's talking about the Supreme Lord who rests with Lakshmi Devi. Of course, we understand her to be Srimati Radharani. Jayadev Goswami was a devotee of Radha Krishna. And his moods of separation are especially prominent in his works. And that is why it is appropriate that Jagannath likes this. You see, there are different moods in devotion, as you all know. The mood of Vaikuntha is a mood of opulence, where the Lord is understood as being the Supreme Lord. He is worshipped as the Supreme Lord. The mood is of awe and reverence. So therefore, Vaikuntha is called Aishwarya Dham. Aishwarya means opulence. Then we have Vrindavan, which is full of sweetness. Not that it doesn't have opulence. It has even more opulence than Vaikuntha. But the sweetness eclipses the opulence and makes that the most prominent thing in Vrindavan because of the intimacy and the lack of formality in the relationship between the Lord and his devotees. There is no conception of awe and reverence in the hearts of the devotees of Vrindavan when they serve Krishna. They don't love him and serve him because he's God. Krishna's godhood has nothing to do with the love they feel. On the contrary, when there is some remembrance of the godhood of Krishna, that actually interferes. So then Krishna covers it up. And even when that conception of Aishwarya comes in, the speciality of Vrindavan is that it actually nourishes and increases the sweetness of the devotion they feel. So Vrindavan is called Madhurya Dham. Madhurya means sweetness. Then there is Navadvip, Mayapur, which is the place of extreme magnanimity or compassion, which is called Audharya. Udar means compassionate or magnanimous. Audarya means the place, Audarya Dham means the place of magnanimity. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that form of Krishna who bestows unlimited mercy upon the conditioned living entities without any consideration of qualification or disqualification of the recipient. So it's the place of mercy, Audarya Dham. So these are the three prominent places, dhams that we are acquainted with, the place of opulence, the place of sweetness, the place of compassion or mercy. But then, what about Jagannath Puri? What kind of dham is that? Can anyone say? Is it Audarya? Is it Madhurya? Is it Aishwarya? What is it? Or is it something else? All three. Yes, it is all three. And especially separation. That's right. It's called Vipralambha Kshetra. It's Vipralambha Dham. It's the place of separation. That is why Krishna has this particular form. It's the form of separation of Lord Jagannath. When Krishna in Dwarka feels separation from the residents of Vrindavan and especially from Srimati Radharani, the form that he assumes is Jagannath. The form with the hands extended, the eyes expanded, and so on. So this is the place of separation. And therefore, this is the hidden reason why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu preferred to come to Jagannath Puri rather than Vrindavan. The external reason is, of course, that his mother, Sachi Devi, requested him to go to Jagannath Puri. Because she said Navadvip and Jagannath Puri are like two rooms in the same house. They're close by physically. So devotees from here can come there, you can come here. And so you're very accessible to us. We don't feel that you've left us and gone. So ostensibly Mahaprabhu went there to honor the request of his mother, which is of course true. But that is the external reason. And the internal reason is because Mahaprabhu is Krishna who has come in the mood of separation to taste the mellows of Vipralambha Seva, the Seva in separation from Krishna. So we have a very unique situation when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in Jagannath Puri because you have the two lords in separation but differently. Because Jagannath is Krishna feeling separation from the residents of Vrindavan and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna in separation from Krishna because he's in the mood of Srimati Radharani. So therefore we see that the special quality of Jagannath Puri is the feeling of separation. And this is not perhaps appreciated by most people except those who are followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and who are acquainted with the devotional conclusions of the Siddhanta as given by Mahaprabhu. And this is one reason and the most important reason why Mahaprabhu loved the compositions of Jayadev Goswami, because they are full of feelings of such separation and they are in the mood of Vrindavan, of Radha and Krishna. So Jayadev Goswami's works are like that. So when he speaks about Kamala, Kamala is generally referred to as the one who's on the lotus, that's Lakshmi. But we understand her to be Radharani, who is the original Lakshmi Devi. So Krishna is always with Srimati Radharani. Dhrita Kundala. Kundala is earrings. So he's decorated with earrings. Kalita Lalita Vanamala, and he is decorated with a charming garland of forest flowers. Because in Vrindavan, these are the ornaments that Krishna wears, mostly of flowers. If you read the descriptions of Shukadev Goswami in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we will see that as Krishna went with his friends, cowherd boyfriends, into the forest to graze the cows, they would decorate themselves with various minerals from the fields, as in when they picked up some flowers and so on. And that was their enjoyment, that was their decoration and so on. It's a very rustic kind of thing, but very sweet nevertheless. So Krishna is famous for being the Vanamali. Vanamali is one who has the Vanamala. Van means forest, mala means a garland. Srila Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu has spoken about many different types of garlands that Krishna wears. And I would urge you to refresh your memory by reading that section of the Nectar of Devotion when you go back tonight. He also has the famous Vaijayanti garland, which is composed of flowers of five different colors, Srila Prabhupada said. Different flowers, let me see if I remember, Mandar, Kumud, Tulsi, Lotus, like that. There are four or five different flowers. So Krishna wears garlands of these flowers, Vanamala, and that makes him look even more dashing and charming as he walks into the forest. Jaya Jaya Deva Hare. So all glories to Lord Hari. So this is the last line of every verse. And then in the second verse, oh, can we have that on, please, if it's so that we can follow the verse as I speak it? Dinamani Mandala Mandana He. Dinamani is the sun, and mandala is the orb, that's the orb of the sun. Mandana is decoration or ornaments. O Lord, whose ornaments are as splendid as the orb of the sun. And of course, Srila Prabhupada explains in the Krishna book that Krishna wears ornaments that may be as splendid as the sun, but actually the ornaments get beautified by decorating Krishna. Generally, people like to beautify themselves to look more beautiful, to look more attractive. And Krishna does it as a matter of custom as well, but he doesn't need the ornaments to look more beautiful. He's anyway all attractive, but he does it anyway, and the ornaments become ornamented because they are on the person, the transcendental person of Sri Krishna. Bhava Khandana E. Bhava is this material existence. The word bhava in Sanskrit actually means to become. So to become, what do we become? Why is this material world called to become? You become old, you become dead, you become diseased, you become old, you become born again, you keep becoming something all the time. You become a human, you become a demigod, you become an animal, you become a tree, you become. So it's bhava. So this is a wheel of samsara, a cycle of repeated birth and death. And khandana means to break. So Krishna is the one who breaks this deadly cycle of birth and death. So O Lord, who breaks a cycle of repeated birth and death. Muni jana manasa hansa. O swan who swims in the peaceful lake of the sages' hearts. Munijana refers to the great sages. Manasa, in their minds. The minds of the great saintly persons are like lakes, which are very calm and still, and which are very serene, because the minds of sages are peaceful. When one's mind is obsessed with desires for worldly enjoyment, then one cannot be peaceful. One becomes peaceful when there are no longer any material desires, and then one actually becomes happy when there is devotion to Krishna within the mind. Of course, the way to drive away the material desires in the first place is by bringing in that devotion to Krishna. That's the easiest way, the most effective way to do that. Rather than to artificially try to remove the material desires, it's better to try to be Krishna's pure devotee, engage wholeheartedly in Krishna's service, and the material desires automatically go away. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, at one place, When the bulls are being described in Braja, then Shukadev Goswami says, just look at these bulls. They look like saintly sages who are absorbed deeply in meditation. Have you observed the bulls sometimes? They sit there very peaceful as if they are contemplating something very philosophical, very deep. They sit very quiet, regal and royal as they sit absorbed. When I was in Jagannath Puri recently, I was talking about this to some devotees. We were walking on the street. And you know how streets in India are, and especially Jagannath Puri, it's not peaceful. So there's all these rickshaws and everyone honking all over the place and people shouting. It's very noisy. And here was this bull sitting right in the middle of the street, least concerned about what was going on around him. Because he was in the middle, everyone was coming there, screeching to a halt and then moving to the side. And then, you know, it was all chaos all around him. But he was just peaceful. He's sitting there unconcerned, chewing his cud and just sitting there. And I was reminded of that verse that, yes, this is how the saintly people are. Even in the midst of the turbulence of this world, in their minds, they're so peaceful. So it is such pure hearts in which the Lord likes to enter and reside. And the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Narad Muni speaks to Vyasadeva about the crows and the swans. There are two types of birds. Birds of a feather flock together, Prabhupada reminds us. And the swans don't like to be with the crows and vice versa. The crows are usually at a place where there is filth. Even if there is a beautiful fragrant garden with many flowers, the crows will try to look for a place where there is some dirt. Whereas the swans like to reside in places which are very serene, calm, beautiful, filled like lakes with lotus flowers and pleasant breezes blowing with the mountains in the backdrop and so on. So swans like this kind of place. So the sages are sometimes referred to as swans because they also like to relish topics in their heart or with their ears or speak with their tongues, topics connected to Krishna. Transcendental topics. They do not delight in the topics of this world. That's one reason they're called swans. So topics connected to Krishna are considered like beautiful places for the mind to reside in. And worldly topics are like dirty places where the crows go. So people who indulge in worldly gossip and talk are like the crows. And the saintly devotees are like the swans. So because their hearts are so clean and pure, so Krishna, the transcendental swan, the Rajahamsa, the king of all swans, the king amongst all the saintly persons, resides there. He loves to come there and reside. Srila Prabhupada used to quote the Mukundamala Stotra verse of King Kulashekara. Krishna Tvadiya Padapankaja Panjarantam. The verse in which he says, Adyaiva me vishatu manasa rajahamsa. The Kulashekar says, my dear Lord, let my prana, my life airs, leave the body right now when I'm in good health. And let my mind, which is like a swan, be entangled in the stems of your lotus feet. So therefore, this is the meditation of the devotee. And Krishna also likes to be in that position. So Krishna comes in there and resides in the heart. So he is a swan who relishes being in the hearts of the swan of the pure sages. Another reason the devotees are compared to swans is that the swan is celebrated for a particular exceptional quality that it can separate milk from water. From a mixture of milk and water, it takes out the milk. This is how the poets have described it. I don't know whether it actually happens. I've never seen it. But that's how the poets have always spoken about swans. I always had a desire. One day I'm going to test it out and see whether it's a fact. But maybe they are Kali Yuga swans and they won't do it, I don't know. But anyway, the poets have always spoken about the swan as being capable of extracting milk from a mixture of milk and water. So similarly, the swan-like sages extract the essence from this world. And the essence is, of course, Krishna and Krishna consciousness. There's nothing else in this world worthwhile except Krishna consciousness. So the swan-like sages, they not only see Krishna's presence everywhere in the form of his energy, and they connect the energy to him, they use everything in existence for Krishna's service and become Krishna conscious. So they are also called swans. The swans have this exceptional quality, but the materialistic people in the world, they actually extract water from the mixture of milk and water, rather than extracting milk. So even when they come to a holy place, they look for defects. Oh, just see this. Oh, why do you people do that? Oh, why the deity like this? Oh, what is... So even when they are with devotees, they rather look for faults or look for some defect. And that's especially so when we come to Vrindavan for the first time. If people come and ask, what is this? Is it... Why are people like this? Why do people do like this? Why do people do like that? Because we are conditioned to analyze things, examine things in a certain way. And therefore we use our analytical prowess in devotional service on the devotional platform. And sometimes it's a big clash. So in devotional service, we have to somehow dispense with that sensory perception that gives rise to certain types of analysis in this world. If we want to be hamsas, we have to extract the milk. And Krishna, of course, is the perfect swan. So, muni jana manasa hamsa, jaya jaya deva hare. All glories to Lord Hari. Kaliya vishadhara ganjana hai. That's the third verse. O Lord, who defeated the poisonous Kaliya serpent. Visha is poison, dhara means to hold. So Kaliya Vishadhara Ganjana hai. So he is the destroyer or the subduer of Kaliya, who was holding so much of poison. And as we all know from Krishna book and the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, the poison that Kaliya had was so terrible that even the birds flying above the Yamuna, the Kaliya Hrada, the lake in which Kaliya resided, the fumes of that poison were so toxic that the birds flying in the sky would fall down and die. And then when the cowherd boys and the cows went with Krishna to drink the water of the Yamuna, they also died. And then Krishna revived them with his loving glance. When he came there, he said, oh, I have to save my dear devotees. And then, of course, he climbed the famous Kadamba tree. He clapped his arms like a wrestler to say, look, I'm not incompetent. I can do it. I can do the needful. And then he jumped into the Yamuna with a huge, mighty splash. And the sound reverberated down to the depths of the river or the lake where Kaliya was woken out of his stupor as he was sleeping. And he was outraged. Who dare come to my territory like this? Without my permission, in such a rude way. And then when Kaliya came up, he had the first glance of Krishna. And Shukadev Goswami describes that even Kaliya was struck with wonder to see the beauty of this little boy. But nevertheless, a snake is a snake. So he's full of envy anyway. And then the epic battle ensued between Krishna and Kaliya. And eventually, Krishna subdued Kaliya. Now Krishna can subdue the holder of poison, Visha. And there's another word in Sanskrit that's similar to Visha, and that is Vishaya. The word Vishaya has many meanings, but it also means the objects of sense enjoyment. Vishaya. Now of the two, Visha is poison, and Vishaya are the objects of sense enjoyment, Which is more dangerous? Any thoughts? Yes. Sorry? The objects of sense enjoyment are more dangerous, and why would that be? Yes. Sorry? Very alluring, that's right, yes. But something more? Okay, poison, yeah, you're on the right track. Poison can kill the body, but sense enjoyment affects the soul. Well, you see, poison, yes, Mataji. Okay, so the snake with the jewel on his head attracts us to take the poison, to get bitten and be poisoned, all right? But there's another important distinction. Visha, poison, can kill the body. If we drink poison, we die. But you die only once, right? This body is destroyed and then it's finished. But you have another birth. But Vishaya, the objects of sense enjoyment, when we start enjoying those, then we lose many bodies. We have to keep taking birth. We have to take birth after birth after birth after birth. So visha or poison destroys only one body when you take it. But vishaya destroys many, many bodies. We've all had millions of lives in this material world. Perhaps in some lifetime, we may have taken poison and killed ourselves. We don't know. Maybe, maybe not. In all these trillions of lives that we've had here, maybe somebody poisoned us one time, or maybe we knowingly or unknowingly took some poison, we destroyed one body. But that's just one body. But we've had millions of births because we were enjoying sense enjoyment. So we were with the Vishaya, so we lost so many bodies. So which is worse, to destroy many bodies or to destroy just one body? So therefore the Vishaya is considered to be more dangerous than the Visha or the poison. That doesn't mean, of course, that we take poison lightly. So anyway, Krishna can not only subdue the Kaliya serpent who holds so much poison, but he can also subdue that poisonous mentality in our heart that wants us to enjoy this material world. Janaranjanae. So he's the delight of the people. The word ranjana means delight. Gokula ranjana kana. Yes? Yashomati nandana brajabaradhara. So Krishna is the delight of the people. So this is what Krishna consciousness is all about. It's not about peace. It's about delight. Transcendental delight. Because the soul is seeking delight. The soul cannot be happy with anything but transcendental bliss. So Krishna is Janaranjana. Wherever he goes, he brings delight to the people. Yadukula Nalina Dinesha. Oh, brilliantly shining sun that causes the lotus flower of the Yadu dynasty to bloom. The word Nalina is lotus. Yadukula means the dynasty of the Yadus. Dinesha means the sun. Dina is the day. Isha means the Lord. The Lord of the day is the sun. Because the sun rules over the day, so to speak. So Krishna is a brilliantly shining sun that causes the lotus flower of the Yadu dynasty to bloom. Because the lotus flower blooms with sunlight and becomes even more beautiful. So similarly, the Yadu dynasty also blossoms because of the presence of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada explains that generally a person becomes famous if he's born in a famous family. Let's say you have some famous big families, you're Rockefeller or whatever it may be. And if someone's born there, then you say, oh, he's a Rockefeller. So he becomes famous because he's born in that famous family. However, with Krishna, the family that he's born in becomes famous. So the Yadu dynasty becomes famous because it's the dynasty in which Krishna appears. So anyway, they're all Krishna's devotees, so therefore they are like the pure, beautiful lotus. But then when Krishna is present, the lotus blooms. Just as when there is sunlight, the lotus blooms. So the Yadu dynasty actually blossoms, it blooms with great joy because of the presence of Krishna. Krishna is the one who makes the Yadu dynasty all auspicious and famous. Another example Prabhupada gives is that of the Malayaja Chandana, the sandalwood that is in the Malaya province. It's famous in South India for sandalwood. So the Malaya province, Germans to take birth. So that sandalwood that has appeared in the Malaya forest is called Malaya Chandana. It's Malaya sandalwood. However, the sandalwood has its own characteristics different from that of the forest. And it's because of the sandalwood that the forest has become famous. So similarly, the Yadu dynasty becomes glorious because of the presence of Krishna in that dynasty. Then the next verse, text 4. Madhumura Naraka Vinashanahe. O killer of the demons, Madhu, Mura and Naraka. Madhu was a demon, and therefore Krishna is called Madhusudana. But when did Krishna kill Madhu? What was the pastime? Mura and Naraka, yes. Who remembers from Krishna book? When did Krishna kill Mura and Naraka? Narakasur and Mura. Krishna is called Murari because he killed Mura. And he also killed Narakasura. Anyone remembers? Sorry? That's right, absolutely, yes. He came to rescue the 16,000 princesses. He came to Narakasura, who had imprisoned these princesses. And Krishna came there. He defeated the general of Bhomasura, Narakasura, who happened to be Krishna's own son, by the way. And then he killed his generals, Mura, and therefore he's called Murari. Eventually, he also killed his own son. And sometimes it's a solace to some devotees who may have children who are not devotees. If it's any consolation that even Krishna sometimes has sons who, you know, don't become devotees, they don't feel too bad about it. That's the nature of this world. How was Bhomasura, Narakasura, Krishna's son? Bhumi Devi, that's right. When he came as Lord Varaha and he lifted Bhumi Devi from the Garbhodaka ocean, so by the touch of the tusk, the tip of the tusk of Varahadev on Bhumi, on Mother Earth, she became impregnated. And then we had Bhomasura. From Bhumi comes Bhoma. So his name was Bhoma. And because he was an asura, a demon, so he was called Bhomasura or Narakasura. So Mura and Naraka, yes. But what about Madhu? Why is he called Madhusudana? Actually, the history goes back to his incarnation as Hayagriva. And this is also an interesting point, that Hayagriva is the name of an incarnation of Krishna. It's also the name of a demon. And they are both connected to the Vedas, actually. Haya is horse, Griva is neck. So just as Narasimha Dev is half lion and half man, he has the body, the torso and the body of a human and the head of a lion. Similarly, Hayagriva has the head of a horse. So he came and rescued, he brought the Vedas back to Brahma when Brahma had dozed off for a while. The Madhu came and actually stole the Vedas from Brahma. And then the Lord appeared and tricked Madhu into giving the Vedas back and to actually killing him. He had a boon that he couldn't be killed. So then Krishna wanted to honor, or Vishnu wanted to honor the words of his devotees who offer such benedictions. So then he sweet talked Mura, and he's so great and everything, and he said, okay, so what benediction do you want? I want your death. So then that's how Mura, I beg your pardon, Madhu, he died, and then Krishna retrieved the Vedas and gave them to Brahma. So that's why Krishna is called Madhusudana. And Arjuna addresses Krishna as Madhusudana even in the Bhagavad Gita on several occasions. So he is the destroyer or the killer of these demons. Madhumura Naraka Vinashana He. Garuda Asana. Asana means the seat or the carrier or the vehicle. So Garuda is the carrier of the Supreme Lord. If we can have our Toyotas and our Volkswagens and BMWs, why can't Krishna have his vehicle? He does. And his vehicle is much better than ours, Garuda. Garuda is a phenomenal personality. I mean, it needs a lot of time to talk about the glories of Garuda. And he is Krishna's special carrier. He is involved in many of the Lord's transcendental pastimes. And especially he's very quick when it comes to bringing the Lord here when his devotees are in trouble. Like in the Gajendra episode. When Gajendra was in trouble and he called out for Krishna, remembering the prayers that he had offered to him in the previous life, then Garuda brought him here in an instant. And Krishna came riding upon Garuda and he rescued Gajendra. So Garuda is his vehicle. In fact, the entire pantheon of the demigods all have their own vehicles. Even though they don't actually need vehicles. One time one person asked me, why does God need a vehicle? He doesn't need it, but it's just that he engages his devotees in his service. Because we need to serve Krishna, so Krishna engages us in certain ways to dovetail our propensities in his service. So therefore you have Indra who rides on the elephant, Airavata. Brahma rides on the swan. And then you have Ganesha who rides on the mouse. And who else? Shiva, Lord Shiva rides on the bull, Nandi. What does Ganga Devi ride on? The crocodile, Makara. So each of the demigods and demigoddesses have their own carriers. So Krishna has his carrier, Garuda. Surakula Keli Nidana. O Lord who enjoys pastimes amongst the dynasties of the demigods. So it's not that Krishna appears only on the earth planet. He appears on the different planets in the universe. But the pastimes that he performs on the earth are unique. And especially those pastimes that he performs in Vrindavan. So those are even more charming and more sweet than the pastimes he performs in the heavenly planets. Because in the heavenly planets, the demigods have a conception of the godhood of God, of Krishna. So there is an element of awe and reverence in that devotion. Whereas in Vrindavan, there is no such trace of awe and reverence. Therefore, the demigods also worship Vrindavan. And they all come to Vrindavan to offer worship to the Lord. In the Ananda Vrindavan Champu of Kavi Karnapur, at one place he describes how the cowherd boys would come back along with Krishna at the end of the day after grazing the cows in the forest. And then they would have all these effulgent personalities descending from the sky. And they would descend onto the ground. Not quite, because they will be 6 inches off the ground. You know that the demigods don't touch the ground, right? When they come to the earth, they are 6 inches off the ground. So the demigods would come there. And these little village boys, what do they know who are demigods? And they don't have Vedic knowledge, at least the externals of it. So they would see all these effulgent personality, somebody with five heads and somebody with four heads, and all, and they're coming with arati paraphernalia. And there's little Krishna, who's their friend, who they've been teasing and who they've been fighting with and wrestling with. And all of a sudden they find this little boy is being worshipped by all these great personalities descending from the sky. And then they come into worship and they're nonplussed, and the boys are watching in bewilderment what's happening to their friend. And then these demigods leave the plates behind and they go away, and then the Brajabasis are wondering, what's all this here? What are all these golden plates and all the paraphernalia over here? So even though the Lord appears and performs pastimes in all parts of the universe, in all the planets he appears, but especially his appearance in the earth is glorified. And on the earth, especially in Vrindavan, his pastimes are glorified. In Jaya Jaya Deva Hare, all glories to Lord Hari. Text 5. Amala Kamala Dala Lochana He. It's also a beautiful line. Very simple word. Mala means dirt. Amala means that which doesn't have dirt. Clean. Amala means very pure. Kamala means lotus. Dala means the petals. Lochana is the eyes. So whose eyes are immaculate lotus petals. Amala Kamala Dala Lochana He. So we sing this every morning, of course, in the Shringar Darshan time. We sing of Krishna's eyes as being like immaculate lotus petals. So the lotus is very common as an object of comparison to Krishna. It's inadequate because nothing in this world can adequately compare to Krishna's transcendental qualities. Nevertheless, invoking the logic of the Chandra Shakha Nyaya, the logic of the moon and the branch, these analogies are sometimes given. The Chandra Shakha Nyaya, Srila Prabhupada explains as, when a mother wants to show her child the moon and the child is not able to figure out where to look, then she takes him to a tree and there are branches, and she said, look between these two branches, and then there's a moon there behind, way up in the sky. So similarly, we have these examples, analogies, metaphors and so on that we give to help us get some kind of understanding about Krishna. Really, to say that Krishna's eyes are like the immaculate, like the lotus petals, is an indication at best. But Krishna's eyes are actually much more beautiful than that. But because the lotus is the thing that we can understand in this world as a symbol of beauty and purity, so it's a good example to have. So the lotus, therefore, is very special for many reasons for us. Krishna's lotus feet, lotus eyes, lotus face, his lotus navel. So everything about Krishna is compared to a lotus. Bhava mochana e. Mochana means to give freedom from. The same thing as earlier, bhava khandana e. So Krishna is the one who gives us freedom from the cycle of birth and death. Tribhuvana bhuvana nidhana. O priceless treasure of the three worlds. So yes, Krishna is indeed the actual treasure, the greatest treasure in life, the greatest wealth. So one who has Krishna is wealthy. One who doesn't have Krishna, even if he or she is a billionaire, is actually not wealthy at all, is very poor. So wealth is to be construed or understood in terms of the degree to which we possess, the possessor of all wealth. Because a devotee is the one who possesses Krishna. Krishna submits himself and becomes a plaything in the hands of his devotees. Krishna sells himself to his devotees. When Advaita Acharya was beckoning the Lord to descend, he was chanting this prayer while offering water from the Ganga along with Tulasi to his Shalagram Shila. Tulasi dala matrena jalasi chulukenava vikrinite svamatmanam bhaktebhyo bhaktavatsalaha. In this verse, it says that if one offers to Krishna a little bit of a Ganga water in the palm of one's hand and a tulsi leaf, then Krishna becomes so obliged to that devotee that he actually sells himself to the devotee. Vikrinite svam atmanam. He sells himself completely to the devotee because there is so much devotion in that offering. So Krishna becomes a property of the devotee. This is the special feature of Krishna. Therefore, Krishna doesn't give devotional service so easily. He may give material opulences and enjoyment. He may give liberation even. But very rarely does he give bhakti, prema bhakti. And this is what Srila Rupa Goswami explains in the Nectar of Devotion. So Krishna is the possessor of all opulences, Bhagavan. That's how we define Bhagavan, or the Supreme Lord. And then the devotee owns, the one who owns all opulences. So naturally he has a priceless treasure. You know, there is this saying about Gandhi. A little example from the world of politics. That when he was involved in the freedom movement against the British in India, naturally a lot of wealth was required to conduct his activities. So he had a few wealthy people, some famous business people, of industrialists and business people in India. And Prabhupada explained that actually he didn't ask them for money, but he had them, he captured their hearts. So then their pockets were automatically with him. So, like that. So, similarly, you know, you capture Krishna, then everything is with you. You have, so the devotees, Prabhupada used to say, many times people get envious of the devotees. They don't do jobs and they don't go for work, but still they have everything. They're living a royal life, living in a castle, living in a big place. So that's because Krishna is the possessor of all opulences. And even the one who serves the possessor of all opulences lives opulently. And when the devotion of the devotee increases to a degree when the Lord becomes his property, then he also owns the wealthiest of wealthy persons. So this is the special quality of Krishna. So one of Krishna consciousness. So one actually becomes wealthy when one becomes Krishna conscious. This is real wealth. Text 6. Janaka Suta Krita Bhushana He. O Lord, who has become the ornament of the daughter of Maharaj Janaka. Bhushan is the ornament. Suta means the daughter. So Lord Ramachandra has become the ornament of the daughter of Maharaj Janaka, that is Sita. And Jita Dushana. Dushana was the name of a demon. He was also one of the generals of Ravana. And this pastime is connected to Shurpanakha. You all know this pastime from the Ramayana. When Lord Ramachandra along with Sita Devi and Lord Lakshman were in the Dandakaranya forest in exile, Shurpanakha, who was a sister of Ravana, approached Ram and Lakshman because she was very attracted to them and she wanted to get married to them. And then of course they both refused and she was enraged. She tried to attack Sita Devi, and Lakshman then chopped off her nose and ears. And she went back howling in pain to her brothers Kara and Dushan. Kara and Dushan came, they sent some soldiers first and then they were killed. Then they came along with 14,000 soldiers. And Lord Ram told Lakshman, just guard Sita Devi in the cave. You don't go anywhere. Just stand outside guarding the cave. I'll dispose these demons off. So then Lord Ram, Valmiki explains in the Ramayana, stood at one place without moving his feet. He just planted his feet firmly, his 2 feet firmly on the ground. And without shifting his feet, he just started letting loose his arrows in streams, and he killed the 14,000 demons in 2 hours. So that's the pastime that's been referred to here. Jita Dushanahe. The same Lord Ram, who is the ornament of Sita Devi, was victorious over Dushan and other demons like him. Samara Shamita Dashakanta. O Lord who defeated the 10-headed Ravana in battle. So Dashakanta, Kanta means a throat, and Dasha means 10. So just like Hayagriva means that the neck of a horse, so Dashakanta means you have 10 necks or 10 heads. Ravana's name originally was, of course, Dashagriva. Dashagriva because he had 10 heads. And Ravana, he got the name because he used to make people cry. You know, he was a bully. He was a terror. So terrorism is not a new thing. It's been around for a while. And we had Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, they were terrorists. So Ravana was also a terrorist. And so he would make people cry, so he was given the name Ravana. And of course, the secret was to hit his heart with the arrow. Initially, as Lord Ram was chopping off the heads, he had a benediction, Ravana, so the heads kept popping back. Till he got the secret from the demigods. So now you go for the heart. So then, when Lord Ram shot an arrow at Ravana's heart, that's when Ravana died and was delivered by the Lord. Text 7. This is another beautiful line. Abhinava Jaladhara Sundarahe. O Lord, as handsome as a fresh rain cloud. Nava means new. Abhinava means just new, freshly formed. Jaladhara. Jala is water. Dhara means that which holds. For Kalia, we had Vishadhara. And for the cloud, you have a poetic term which is Jaladhara, because a cloud holds water. Sundara means beautiful. Again, Chandrashakha Nyaya, an indication of Krishna's beauty and Krishna's complexion. That Krishna is more handsome than a fresh rain cloud, meaning that his complexion is that of the fresh rain cloud. Now again, Krishna's complexion is something quite out of this world. It is not possible for us to imagine with transcendental understanding what that complexion actually is. Inasmuch as you can't expect a colorblind person to understand the subtle nuances or differences of colors, shades of colors. So for us to imagine the complexion, the color of Krishna's transcendental body is not possible. Because we only judge in terms of what we experience in this world. So we are conditioned by our experience. So the conclusions we reach with our intelligence is also therefore limited to what we experience. But Krishna's complexion is not something that is found in this world. But the poets like Shukadev Goswami or Jayadev Goswami, they give us these analogies, metaphors, because these examples come closest in the world to what the reality of Krishna's complexion is. So the Abhinava Jaladhara means a freshly formed rain cloud. So this is the complexion of Krishna, which is sometimes quite bewildering to people in the West, because we are accustomed to different kinds of complexions here. White, black, brown, yellow maybe, but blue, or like a rain cloud, that's something we're not quite accustomed to. But that's something that adds to the uniqueness and charm of Krishna. Dhrita Mandara, he is the one who lifted the Mandara. Mandara means the hill, the Govardhan hill. So Krishna lifting the Govardhan hill is of course one of his most celebrated pastimes. And he became known as the Giridhari or Govardhandhari, Girivaradhari, and so on. Sri Mukha Chandra Chakora. O Chakora bird who drinks the moonlight of Radharani's face. How many of you have heard of this Chakora bird? Chakora. Yes. It's a very special bird. This Chakora bird likes to see the moon and is fascinated by the moon. It's different from the Chataka. There's another bird used in Vaishnava literature, which is the Chataka. The Chataka is the one that waits only for water from the cloud. Even if it's standing next to a lake, it will not drink water. Its throat may be parched with thirst. It wouldn't drink that. It'll just look up to the cloud and wait for the rain to fall from the cloud and then drink that water. But that's different. That's Chataka. This is Chakor. The Chakor bird is fascinated with the moon. And it keeps gazing at the moon for as long as the moon is visible in the sky. And there's many, many poems about this in folklore in India, about the Chakora bird. And therefore the Vaishnava poets have always used this in devotional themes as well. The Chakora, what it does is that when the moon rises, the Chakora is waiting for the moon to rise. As soon as he spots the moon, then his gaze gets locked onto the moon. And Chakora stands transfixed at one spot with his eyes locked on the moon. And the moon rises and rises, and the Chakora just moves its gaze along with the rising of the moon. Doesn't move from the spot. And as the sun, the moon moves, the Chakora stands at one place but moves, tilts its head upwards till the moon is up at the zenith. And then what do you think the bird does after that? When the moon goes behind, you would think all it has to do is to turn around, right? But the Chakor doesn't have time for all that. It just moves its neck behind. You see, just turns its neck like that, like a gymnastic pose. And it follows the moon all the way till it sets. And then it comes up again like that. So that's the Chakor. It doesn't want to lose a moment of seeing the moon. So that's the speciality of the Chakor. So Krishna is compared to the Chakor by Jayadeva Goswami. Shri Mukha. Shri means Lakshmi, but as we have seen, Shri for us means Srimati Radharani. The original repository of all opulence and beauty. So Shri Mukha Chandra Chakora. So Srimati Radharani's face is also like a moon, the transcendental moon. And Krishna is like the transcendental Chakora, who is always gazing at the transcendental beauty of Srimati Radharani's face. Shri Mukha Chandra Chakora, Jaya Jaya Deva Hare. And then text 8, I'll read the translation. O Lord, we are bowing down before your lotus feet. Oh, please think of us in this way. And kindly grant auspiciousness to us who bow down before you. O Lord Jayadev, O Lord Hari, all glories unto you. Text 9. O, this song of the poet Jayadev brings transcendental happiness. It is an auspicious, brilliantly effulgent song. O Lord Hari, all glories unto you. So this is the Mangala Geetam song. I thought I would share a few thoughts on this. It's a very beautiful song, and in many places devotees like to sing this song because it is so charming. What is the time? It's time, yes. So I think we should stop here. Unless there's another melody which I heard in Vrindavan many years ago, which is different from the melody we sing in ISKCON. I heard some Rajabasi singing it. With your permission, I'd like to just chant that melody for this song. Is that okay? Are we okay for time? Okay, this is like a very sweet melody, but that melody has remained in my mind from those days. And it's very nice. Let me try to remember. Okay, can we have the song, please? Yeah, up there. Okay, stay. Yeah. Shrita Kamala Kucha Mandala Hedhrita Kundala Shrita कमला कुच मंडल है धृत कुंतल कलित ललित वन माला जय जय देव हरे कलित ललित वन माला जय जय दीन मणि मंडल मंडन है भव खंडन मंडल मंडन है भव खंड मुनि जन मानस हंस जय जय देव हरे कालीय विषधर गंजन है जन रंजन यदुकुल नलिन दिनेश जय जय देव हरे मधुमुर नर कवि नाशन है गरुड़ासन सुरकुल केलि निदान जय जय देव हरे अमल कमल दल लोचन है भव मोचन त्रिभुवन भुवन निधान जय जय देव हरे जनक सुता कृत भूषण है जित दूषण समर शमित दश कंठ जय जय देव हरे अभिनव जलधर सुंदर है धृत मंदर श्रीमुख चंद्र चकोर जय जय देव हरे तव चरण प्रणता वयम हे इति भावय कुरु कुशलम प्रणतेषु जय जय देव हरे श्री जय देव कवेरिदम हे कुरुते मुदमे मंगलमुज्ज्वल गीतम जय जय देव हरे जय जय देव हरे जय जय देव हरे।
Jaya Deva Hare. Jaya Jaya Deva Hare. Jaya Jaya Deva Hare. Jaya Jaya Deva Hare. Jaya Jaya Deva Hare. Shri Mangala Geetam ki jai, Shri Jayadev Goswami ki jai, Shri Krishna Balaram ki jai, Shri Shri Radha Shyama Sundara ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, New Raman Reti ki jai, Gaur Premanande, Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.